Songwriter Stephen Merritt has been called the Cole Porter of his generation by Time Out New York. His work includes the Magnetic Fields masterpiece 69 Love Songs and 24 albums under 4 different band names besides. He's the author of the book 101 Two-Letter Words, which was illustrated by New Yorker cartoonist Roz Chast. He will be at Massmocha in North Adams, Massachusetts this Saturday, November 21st at 8 o'clock, playing 26 songs pulled from his repertoire, played in alphabetical order with Magnetic Fields bandmate and cellist Sam Duvall. A resident of our Grand Region, Stephen Merritt joins us in studio now, and it's a great pleasure to have him on the program. How are you, sir?
I'm well enough, thank you.
Just well enough.
I haven't had any food. Only tea.
Is this a frequent problem, or do you think it easily remedied, I assume?
Oh, yes, I'm planning to go to that vegan restaurant on Lark Street later on.
There you go. When it comes to doing a show like this on Saturday, how much of that occupies your time and your brain space?
As little as possible. I'm in the middle of making a record. I played last Saturday at the City Winery in Manhattan, and discovered to my horror that I had no calluses at all. So ordinarily, playing the ukulele is quite easy. Playing the ukulele was hard and painful.
And are you calloused up now for Saturday?
No, I think I'd better rehearse when I get home.
What goes into a rehearsal?
Just playing the ukulele, so I get some calluses.
When it comes to the actual idea of doing a show like this while you're putting together and creating new music, do they ever clash? Do they ever bang heads? Or is one good for the other?
Good question. I don't think enough about playing live, so they probably interfere with each other a little bit, but my priority is the recording.
You don't think enough about playing live. So when you say that, is that a commentary? Do you feel that you should do it more, think about it, or do you feel that what you do is sufficient and that is a definitive statement? I don't think as much about it.
I always think I should probably devote more of my attention to playing live and to practicing singing, because I don't think I do either one of them particularly well. All of my aesthetic and self-esteem are concentrated on recording.
Does that mean that it is in some way safer for you?
To play live?
No, to record. Meaning and there's more creativity, right?
For me, I feel like there's more creativity playing in the studio when I can edit than there is playing in front of other people when I can't edit.
So the obvious question being, then why do you take these gigs to play in front of people?
Oh, I have always been open about this. I play live for money. I put out records for love.
Okay. So it's worth your while.
Other people see records as advertisements for playing live. I see playing live as advertisements for the records.
What does that mean for what we could experience on Saturday night? Will there be some sort of advertisement for what you're working on now?
I will probably mention that there's merch at the merch table, but I don't think I will talk about the record that I'm in the middle of making, because that might change, and I don't want to say anything about it that is going to be later falsified.
What is the process? Do you know what the process is in the sense of how long this will take you to complete this project?
I'm trying to finish it by the beginning of April.
And are you a person who usually meets your deadlines?
In this case, if I don't meet the deadline, I have another year. So there's a strong incentive for me to meet the deadline.
And then if you do meet the deadline, then you have a year to do something else.
I've only ever been unhappy with one album where I met the deadline too soon, I think.
What were you unhappy about?
I felt it was a little undercooked.
Undercooked?
It's only barely a metaphor. It's a little unpolished, a little underthought.
Do you realize that when you hear it, or do you realize that when perhaps performing it, of saying, oh, this could have been different?
Just when I hear it. I think the songs are not undercooked, just the recording.
Also begging the question of how much are you a perfectionist?
It's not for me to say.
But you're the one you're trying to please.
I'm not the only one I'm trying to please. I'm also trying to please a record label and eventually, I suppose, an audience.
What do you make of that audience? What do you think that audience expects from Stephen Merritt?
Unfortunately, the only audience I ever see is the front row, and the people who sit in the front row are 21-year-old, I don't want to call them twinks, they're adorable 21-year-old male people who don't know enough to sit further back, because no one else wants to sit in the front row. They'll be spat upon by singers and not able to hear the correct mix of the music because everything is a little out of phase and a little messy if you're in the front row. If you want to get the singer's respiratory disorders, then sit in the front row. Otherwise, stay back.
And you'll assume that as they become 31 and 41, they'll realize to sit back a little further.
Absolutely. It's really true that the front row is entirely very young people who quickly learn that they don't want to be in the front row.
When you were talking about the sound mix, how much thought do you put in that? I mean, I'm assuming a lot of how it works when you're doing it live.
Well, right now it's me playing the ukulele and Sam playing the cello, so there's only three faders to move up and down, really, plus reverb.
So there's not a lot that can go wrong.
There's not a lot that can go wrong, so I actually have not checked it. I don't tape it or anything.
Would that bother you if you did?
I really don't like hearing my live, unedited voice, and I prefer to keep my illusions about it sounding reasonably well.
Because if you hear the audience react and it's a positive reaction, you could leave with that. Or you can leave with that and then listen to a tape and have that shot to hell.
Right. I would rather just think, the audience is clapping, it must be okay.
See, I think that's fine. I agree with you entirely. What do you think it is about us? I mean, I'm a broadcaster, you're a singer, but there's something about humans just in general that, I mean, even in my line of work, I do not like hearing myself back.
Sure.
What do you
and
think
why
that
should
is?
You? It's not something that, it's not part of your job to hear yourself back.
Do you feel sometimes like you're misidentified in the sense of it doesn't sound like you, or what it is in your brain tells you that it sounds good, and then when you listen back, you're like, oh, wow, that doesn't sound good.
Everyone sounds completely different in their heads from how they sound in the air. In my head, I sound like, you know, reassuring head on daddy's chest. I guess I never had one. I sound like Orson Welles in my head.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess in the air, I sound more like Don Knotts impersonating Orson Welles. Or making fun of Orson Welles.
Or making fun of Orson Welles, yeah. Tell me about 101 Two-Letter Words. How did that project come about? It's a very cool project.
I was playing a lot of Words with Friends and Scrabble before Scrabble imploded. And I just couldn't remember all those two-letter words. And I started writing myself mnemonics to help me remember. And when I write mnemonics, they tend to be rhymed because that's what I do for a living. And quickly, it occurred to me that I could just write mnemonics for all of them And if I was going to do that for myself, why not do it for everybody? Particularly for everybody I know, because I felt kind of like I would be cheating.
Yeah.
Unless I gave it to everybody I was playing with. And then I thought, if I'm going to do that, I may as well do it for everyone I might ever be playing with, the public. And it quickly became clear that illustrations would be a good idea. For the mnemonics, really. It's a lot easier to remember the picture as well as the poem.
Roz Chast is one of the best. She's a dear friend of the show. She's been on many times. She an amazing woman, an amazing artist, but also amazing with words.
Yes, she is. Unlike me.
Why do you think Scrabble was imploded?
I think Hasbro let somebody who didn't care about Scrabble take over the online Scrabble, and it just won't even play on my smartphone.
Mm.
I can't get it to keep going, to keep opening long enough to complete a single game. I have no idea why they're so bad at this, but and I guess I've just lost my Scrabble endorsement, but I don't really understand how they can be so shambolic in their implementation.
Do you still play the game on a board with tiles?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm a big actual Scrabble fan.
Yeah.
I call it acoustic Scrabble.
So on Saturday night, you'll be playing 26 songs pulled from your repertoire. Why alphabetical order?
Why not alphabetical order? 26 songs was about the right length.
Okay.
So it seemed that the way to organize that would be either in kanji or in English alphabetical order.
And then I would worry immediately, if you have the idea, then do you know before you think of the idea that you have an X song?
Yes.
So like nothing's going to
Fortunately, happen. I have thought of this before, and I have two choices for an X song.
We just spoke with Sue Grafton, who does the mystery series.
Oh, yes.
A is for alibi, B is for burglar, and so forth. So she came up.
She's going to get to X's for xylophone eventually.
Well, she's at X.
Oh,
and,
really?
And she finally just gave up and said, okay, I'm just going to call the book X. Because I couldn't come up. She said she couldn't come up with anything that identified with what the story she was telling.
And she didn't want to tell a story about xerography or xenon.
Right. Or xenophobia.
Right.
So you just
xenophobia sounds like a reasonably good.
She said it could have worked.
Yeah.
So for you, then you knew you had all 26 letters. But that says a lot about your productivity, doesn't it?
Sorry, I'm off in Sue Grafton land, giving her suggestions. Xerxes, the Xerxes killer. What?
So are you? It says a lot about your productivity.
No matter what we say for the rest of the show,
you're gonna be thinking about
everyone in the audience is going to be thinking about words that begin with X. I'm sorry. Let's begin every sentence with the letter X.
So what are the song? What's your X song?
Well, I'm not going to tell you, but the choices are Javier Says and Xylophone Track.
Okay. So my question was, it seems like it says a lot about your productivity that you have songs, enough songs to be able to do a project like this.
Yes, and I have flirted enough with alphabetical order before that I happen to have song titles beginning with X and with Z in reserve, and J and K and Q, the high scoring letters.
How do you announce them from the stage? I mean, do you want people to know that this is the J song, or do you just go into the next song and let them figure it out?
I just go into the next song. I may introduce songs, but usually not by title.
Do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy being out there on stage?
Mostly not. I don't really like being stared at, and I don't like being unable to edit.
Mm-hmm.
I more enjoy the party aspect of knowing that friends I haven't seen in a while are going to come hang around backstage.
I guess because we think of people who want to entertain in some way.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people.
Yeah. So to you, it's the artistic aspect of it.
Yeah, I really, I'd be perfectly happy never playing live again. What I really like is musical theater, where other people are on stage singing my material. That's exciting, because it could all go horribly wrong, and sometimes it does. But when that happens, it isn't actually happening to me. So it's much more fun for me.
So you don't feel as though you're delivering the child, handing it to another performer, that it may perish in their arms, that once you hand it over, then your job is done?
Well, I have a good enough relationship with the director that the performer knows that the director may be shrieking at them if they do anything horribly wrong.
So you understand performers who perform behind screens. And I mean, Linda Ronstadt was famous for being in the back of the theater of not even wanting to see the audience when she performed.
And Carly Simon refused to perform. What has she done, one show in the last 40 years? I totally empathize with Carly Simon. I think that she's right to be afraid. Everyone should be afraid of performing.
So
too blasé to be afraid of performing.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is that fear? I mean, you don't have stage fright. You just don't like it. If I'm reading you right.
Correct. I get a little stage fright if I'm under rehearsed.
Undercooked,
which in fact I am currently under rehearsed, and I probably ought to have some stage fright, but I plan to build up some calluses before I go on Saturday. Besides, it's a museum. They don't care if I sound like a musician or not. I'll sound like a visual artist. I went to art school. I can sound like a visual artist. It's fine.
So basically you say you can pass.
It's not like I have to put on a Liza Minnelli show. I don't have to be good. I just have to do all the songs in alphabetical order.
So if you're trying...
I have to do what I said that I was going to do. As long as I do that, the show went okay.
Now, I'm curious if people are listening and thinking, oh, should I buy tickets for
Clearly,
this?
Clearly. I'm not really into glitzy advertising here. No,
it's very
honest.
I
have a very straightforward show. I am what I am. I do what I do. I don't play the ukulele any better than I sing. But the songs are really good. So if you want to hear some interesting songs put forward in a straightforward way, it's not like it's just me and the ukulele. I do have a cellist, and the cellist really adds a lot. I wouldn't play just me. Because I'm not all that interested in my own solo performing presentation, I don't do it. I make sure there's somebody on stage with me providing some kind of counterpoint. In this case, literally counterpoint.
Is it a musical conversation then?
Sure, yeah.
And you lead it, obviously.
I actually can't hear the cello very well, so yes, it's a...
And now I'm confused.
I can't hear the cello all that well because he's on the other side of the stage.
Oh,
from
I
me.
See.
And, he has monitors, so he can hear me quite well, but I can't hear him very well at all. And I have no monitors. I have a hearing problem, so I don't have any kind of monitoring on stage. I'm only hearing the echo from the back wall of the house.
So you hear the echo from the back wall.
Yes.
And you see the twinks in the front row.
That's it.
That's your
and
experience.
And exit signs. I see a big black expanse with little red exit signs.
And you get a check at the end of the night.
Somebody else gets the check, but yeah.
So beyond that, then the album may be April finish, and then it'll go through its process. And
hopefully come out in the fall.
Excellent. Well, Stephen Merritt will perform at Massmocha with cellist Sam Duvall on Saturday at 8 p.m. To learn more, you can visit massmocha.org or houseoftomorrow.com. Houseoftomorrow.com, or find out more about the Massmocha event by going to massmocha.org. Stephen Merritt, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Do I need you? I'll leave.